Traditions offer a sense of history. They ground us and serve as guideposts and tools along the way. And for my guest, author Jennifer Traynor Thompson, traditions bring her blended family together. With the birth of her son, Thompson gained a renewed interest in traditions and a desire to create magical moments for her family, from picking apples in the fall to making sand dollar ornaments in the summer. When she adopted her daughter, Isabel, from Guatemala, she realized just how important family rituals are. And we're going to find out more on Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Walk with me, talk with me.
And welcome to another edition of Tell Me Your Story, a ritual and a tradition in its own right as far as my life with my wife and I are concerned. Every Saturday at 3 o'clock we come your way, bringing you new paradigms for a new world, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help you fulfill those dreams that you have in heart and mind and soul. We encourage you to stay tuned, and we also encourage you to give us a call this afternoon, because you're going to have an opportunity, should you choose to avail yourself of it, to call and talk to us about the traditions, the rituals, the ceremony that is part of your life, that celebrates the life that you know. And as a matter of fact, 1 week from tomorrow, though we haven't celebrated it religiously every year, it is a rather auspicious day for us in our family, because it was on that day that my wife celebrated life on that day in a kind of a strange and unusual way. But nonetheless, it was one that affirmed her life, and we celebrated that a year after she went through a rather traumatic medical experience and is here to talk about it in this lifetime and today. And we are very grateful for that particular celebration, a celebration of life. That's what rituals and ceremonies and traditions are all about. They're to bring to mind and carry through the years the importance of life and how important it is and what we're going to do with it. And Jennifer, I want to welcome you to our program and thank you for sharing your time, your life, and your family with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's we're going to take a quick break here in just a moment. We're going to encourage people, if we can, Jennifer, to call in and share with us some of the important ceremonies. And if it's of the traditional holidays, whether it's Christmas or Easter, Thanksgiving, Memorial Day, Labor Day, that's fine, too, because those are important days. But we're going to talk, if we can, Jennifer, about some of the less focused on ceremonies and probably what we would refer to those as those that have been created over the years, primarily within families. They're not something that the president's going to declare this is a national holiday, per se, although who knows, maybe someday, maybe. But we have sort of declared it a family holiday, that that day or that date is important to us. And we're going to take a look at those kinds of things. So we're going to open the phone lines up in just a little bit. We encourage you to give us a call. Tell Me Your Story is the name of the program. My guest is Jennifer Traynor Thompson, and she has written the book, The Joy of Family Traditions. That's The Joy of Family Traditions. She's written many other books as well. One that the title rather intrigued me, having to do with Einstein, Beyond Einstein. How do you go beyond him? Well, that's another subject for another day, but we're going to talk about traditions today. And we encourage you to stay tuned to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. I'm here with Jennifer Traynor Thompson, and we're talking about the joy of family traditions. And, of course, you know, Jennifer, I guess the first question is, do you have to have a family to have traditions? And really, I have to kind of preface the question by saying that your family is who you make it, isn't it?
Exactly. It's how we define those who are closest to us. And so I would say you certainly don't have to have a traditional family to have family traditions. And you can have traditions among friends, really among colleagues. It's really who you're close to and who you want to celebrate special moments with.
Well, now, I watch sporting events, and I watch the ball players, especially baseball, and they're sitting there in the dugout, and they're doing these, what we'll call traditions, the rally cap, or whatever it is. They rub the bat at the base 3 or 4 times, and they do these. And these, are these rituals, traditions, or are these just superstitions? What's the difference?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. You know, how do you distinguish a tradition from a ritual from a rut, really?
From a rut, I like that.
And I think for me, traditions are, they're movable. I mean, I'm reminded of the story of the woman who always served ham at Easter with the end of the ham cut off, and her husband finally said, "Why do we cut off the end of the ham?" And she said, "Well, because my mother did it." And he asked his mother-in-law why she did it, and she said, "Well, my mother did it." So he asked her mother why she had always done it, and she said, "Because it never fit in the pan."
Yes. Well, my wife and I have a phrase for that. Anytime we hear people going on and on about this is the way we always do it, we just say, "Ham shanks." And we know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to remember that, mm-hmm. especially with obvious traditions like Christmas, which have so much pressure from outside, from advertising and the media and just our physical environment to adhere to certain customs, that they need only be a tradition for you if they work for you, and they might work this year and not work next year. The point is really to bring you closer to other people, to bring you closer to nature or to whatever you value. And if you have children, really, to help you instill those values and closeness and what's important to you in them.
Hmm. I know that birthdays, obviously, it's almost a given.
Yes.
That's a personal celebration, an annual event. Now, I used to ask the question as I was beginning the process 30 years ago of interviewing, when does a man become a man and a woman become a woman? What are those milestones, as I call them? When does that happen? Now, there are some rituals and traditions in other cultures, aren't there, that make that designation, but we don't seem to really have that here in the West, do we?
I think in Judaism you do see it. Mm-hmm. The bar mitzvah and the bas mitzvah is really a ceremony that marks when a boy or a girl becomes an adult in the Jewish community. And it's a coming-of-age ritual that dates back to the 15th century. But you're absolutely right. In our culture, a boy is considered a man, you know, when he gets his license or when he gets the keys to the car or when he has his first drink. But we don't think, if you look to Native American cultures, for example, there are a lot of really beautiful rituals for helping boys and girls to really savor that moment and to realize the spiritual dimension of it.
Well, I do remember seeing I think it was a National Geographic special on one of the African tribes. Not one of the traditions I would like to be initiated in, being so soft raised here in the West. But the young boy, and I'm not sure what the age was, is turned basically into a pincushion. He's taken out by all of the other men out of the tribe, out into the wilderness, and goes through many different rituals, including this one. And then he's brought back. And, of course, I remember they talked about how when he is taken from the tribe, the women are all weepy-eyed and so forth and so on, but that's part of the ritual. In other words, there may be some emotion there, but that's what you do when you know this boy is going off and will return as a man, and he is definitely treated differently when he returns.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the difference.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Apaches have a wonderful four-day ceremony for when a girl becomes a woman, and I believe it's at age 13, and it's called Changing Woman. And it's a four-day sunrise ceremony that includes a lot of dancing and running, and they meet the rising sun, and there are various gestures and symbols of fertility, and it's really a test of her fortitude that she can physically endure these 4 days of dancing and the stress. And it's very interesting that the Peabody Museum at Harvard did an exhibition on it a few years ago, and they asked some of these girls to write about what their experience had been, and they said that it was really quite extraordinary, and they really felt that it helped them both tie to their heritage but also accept that they were becoming a woman and that they were changing and that they were going out into the world. And it sounded like a very beautiful ceremony that, unlike what many of us in North America would ever experience at that age. There are a few reservations in the United States where they actually do allow non-participants to view this Changing Woman ceremony, one at Fort Apache Indian Reservation in Arizona, and over 4th of July weekend. And it's on my list of things that I want to do one day.
Okay.
With my daughter.
Wonderful. Well, I know that we talk about those rites of passage to the next level. You know, I used to go through that same kind of list as you started to describe, you know, and was it at 21 or 25 or 30 or 40 or what? And I guess everybody has to find that place, at least as far as our society is concerned here in the United States. You really have to find your own way in that regard. And some of us find it earlier and some of us find it later. I have to say that for me, though I suppose I was treated sort of, I mean, anytime anybody refers to me as Mr. Dugan, I say, I'm sorry, you want my dad? I'll get you my dad because I'm not Mr. Dugan. It was age 33. I was on a camping trip, and it was a situation where I had a confrontation with one of my camping partners, and I stood up for myself. And I don't know why, but for some reason, that really impacted on me.
Mm-hmm.
That was a turning point for me. Is that really where we are today? Is that you've got to find those post markers, mile markers, if you will?
I think you do, and I think that you can help your children. You know, there are a number of sort of they're not outward bound, but they are those types of organizations that you can that they can have a wilderness experience, or you can do it with them. But I think that it's really important today, with, you know, 50% of American marriages ending in divorce, and so many households where there isn't even a male presence, that it's really important to help young men to recognize these changes and come into manhood with more than just the keys to the car.
Mm-hmm. How do we begin that process? Whether we're talking about the milestones of age for men or women, or any other, I mean, even whether it's the signing of any kind of a contract, whether it's marriage or business or otherwise, or you know, the birth of a child, again, on and on and on. What are some of the key elements that we want to consider when creating a ceremony, a ritual that will become a tradition in that group of people?
Yeah, I think that where it starts, a great place to start is with nature. And if you look at the history of many traditions, from Valentine's Day to Hanukkah to the summer harvest, they all were linked to nature and to the harvest and to the planting and the renewal, the rebirth, you know, certainly the two solstices, the longest day of the year and the shortest day of the year. And today, it is so easy for us to forget that when we have access to information 24/7, when we are available to people 24/7, when we can really live without really interacting with nature if we choose. And I think that there's so much yearning for that you see, for example, the slow food movement and the community-supported agriculture and people's desire to eat only foods that are within a certain radius of where they live. And I think that a beautiful way to start rituals and traditions is just acknowledging the seasons. And it's, you know, we were talking at the beginning of the show that we needn't focus on the big obvious traditions like Christmas or Easter or Hanukkah, but more on the moment by moment. And I'm reminded of a woman who told me she always knew it was the first day of spring when her mother found a certain flower that was the first flower that would ever grow in their garden, and would just pick it. And I think they were violets, and they would appear on their dining room table that night.
Oh, wow.
And she does that with her daughter now. Or just yesterday, August 1st, was Lammas, which is an ancient harvest festival, and it was really the first day that the wheat came in. And, you know, a ceremony from thousands of years ago was to bake a loaf of bread on this day and leave it out. And what a lovely, simple thing to do, you know, just bake a loaf of bread and leave it out on the kitchen table and have people just take from it. And it's, you know, it's something you can do this year, but not next year. You can pick it up in 5 years. But there's just small moments that help us stay connected, really to the earth and to ourselves and to what is around us.
And sometimes these rituals don't necessarily take place on the same day or the same date. It's just sometimes whenever you revive it, if you will, whenever you bring it to life and celebrate it, it is kind of that important kind of thing.
Well, I mean, where I live, the first day of spring sometimes seems like it's July.
Yes.
it may come in February where you live, but, you know, it's a long time coming where I live. So
yeah.
That's absolutely true. You know, another wonderful tradition is derived from a children's book that was actually published by a California, I think, Crossing Press, and it's out of print now, but it's called Walk When the Moon is Full. And it was published in the 60s, and it was about a family that decided that every month the kids had to tell them when the full moon was, and they would walk on that night. And, you know, in the summer they'd hear tree frogs, and they went swimming in a pond, and in the winter they found themselves in New York City, and they couldn't even find the moon, so they actually found a church keeper who let them go up in the steeple, and they found barn owls, and it was just a wonderful story. And what a simple thing to do, that, you know, 12 times a year you take a walk on the night when the moon is full.
Well, it'll help you get around a lot better, and it's kind of it's an interesting experience. As you're talking about this, it reminds me of some of the hikes that I used to go on with my hiking buddies. I sort of started a men's group of three. That's about all we were, but we would go hiking, and one evening we got stuck out hiking as the sun went down. And we had a half moon at best,
mm-hmm.
and we were traveling by the light of that moon, and we didn't stumble over one single rock, and it was a wonderful experience. When we went back in the daylight, we tripped over everything there was in sight.
Oh, interesting.
So it was very interesting. But the rituals and traditions, the ceremonies, the celebrations, they're vast and many that we can look back and see, and some that we can create. For me, the thought of using a sword in some ceremonial fashion within a tradition or a ritual, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm so interested in the Celtic lore and so forth in medieval times that the sword is important. But it also has a very strong symbolic sense to it. Is that important to incorporate within some of these, that you have things that have very significant meaning and use physical objects in that context in these types of rituals or ceremonies?
It certainly could. I mean, I think that certain families have items that are very important to them, and it's really just a symbolic way to ground us and mm-hmm. to add continuity to our lives. So I'd say sure, without a doubt.
Yeah, I know that
there's one tradition of mm-hmm. the clock keeper at Harvard, and I guess Harvard has, you know, several hundred clocks, and he wound them all or tended them all, and his family had a ritual that when a baby was born, they had to be put inside one of the clocks at Harvard.
Oh.
So, I mean, to each his own, right? Whatever makes you tick.
Uh-huh. Just make sure you get permission. Just make sure you get permission.
That's the key.
Jennifer Trainer Thompson is my guest. The Joy of Family Traditions is the subject on the table today. And if you'd like to give us a call and share one of your rituals or traditions that it's been handed down to you generation after generation, and you know the reasons for all of the elements, and you don't have to shout out Hamshanks because that's just the way we've done it, because we'd love to hear from you. 564-1290, 564-1290, or outside the area, if you're listening live on the internet to our stream, it's 866-564-1290. That's 866-564-1290. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're bringing you new paradigms for a new world, new traditions into your life, into your celebration, into your family. We encourage you to do some of these things. You know, Jennifer, I was looking at this list of different types of traditions, a Family Hibernation Day. There are Sundays, since Sunday seems to be the only day that I've managed to secure as a day off from any kind of broadcast work, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I have one of those kinds of days, not every Sunday, but on many Sundays. Tell me a little bit about Family Hibernation Day. I see a family of bears going into a cave.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I was growing up, I would say that Sundays were really a day of hibernation. You know, no stores were open. We went to church. My father stayed home and put the roast in. And after dinner, we always, really hung out. I sound like I came right off the prairie, but I loved to sew. We played Scrabble, and my father would tinker on his bikes, and we would really tuck in. And I've noticed in New England, and I live in a very snowy part of New England, that this often happens on snow days. You know, it's really an unexpected day. It's a gift to the kids, at least, mm-hmm. that they get to stay home and do nothing. And so, I started this family hibernation day, and it's really, you pick a day. Usually, we do it around Groundhog Day, where you really just tuck in. You turn off the phones, you turn off the computers, you stay in your pajamas all day if you want. You make popcorn, watch an old movie, drink hot chocolate, take a nap on the couch, and you just turn into each other. And that's something that, as you and I were talking about earlier, you don't have to do it on a designated day. It can work when it works for your family. And, you know, it sounds so simplistic, but it's really true that all too infrequently do we take the time to just really connect with each other and savor each other's company and presence.
When we come back from our break, what I'd like to do is maybe talk a little bit about some of the rituals, traditions, and ceremonies. It seems like we've got a list of words we've got to use to describe. Some of the older rituals, those things that have been brought down through the years, similar to the bar mitzvah, and I can't even remember how to pronounce the female turn of age there. But anyway, we'll come back with Jennifer Trainer Thompson and the joy of family traditions. Here on Tell Me Your Story, I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. Tell Me Your Story, I'm Richard Dugan. My guest is the author of The Joy of Family Traditions, Jennifer Trainer Thompson. And we'd love to hear from you, 866-564-1290 or locally, 564-1290. This is Tell Me Your Story, bringing you new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help fulfill the dreams of your heart, soul, and mind. Stay tuned. We're going to continue talking about those rituals and traditions in your life. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with our storyteller of the hour, Jennifer Trainer Thompson, and we're talking about the joy of family traditions. And when we took our break, Jennifer, I left us in the place where we wanted to talk a little bit about the past, whether it be 100 years or 1,000 years or 5,000, however far back we want to go, to trace back the origins of some of the traditions that we celebrate today that maybe some people aren't even aware of. I know that with Christmas there are different starting points for different people depending upon their beliefs.
That's right. You know, it's really interesting. The evolution of this book is that when I had my son, I was interested in traditions, and I started to collect notes, and I'd ask my friends, and pretty soon I realized I had a book, and I was really collecting the obvious traditions, like first day of school or you know, a baptism ceremony or things like that. But as I started to delve further into actually putting together a book, I realized that so many of these traditions are ancient, and you know, we certainly know that when someone gets married, you know, there's a lot of symbolism with the bridal veil and everything. But, I mean, something as simple as a birthday. In the time of Caesar, only royals or the gods were allowed to have birthdays. The peasants couldn't. And they would have parties and invite people basically to serve as foils so that the evil spirits wouldn't know which kid was a birthday kid and swoop down and descend on them. And the birthday cake, which to this day, we always put the candles in a circle, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the cake. You don't do it randomly. You do it in a circle. And that was an ancient ring of fire that further protected the birthday child. And it was considered, which I was fascinated by, that thousands of years this has endured, and we do it by rote without having a clue of why we do it. The same way is that we still apologize if we send a birthday card late. If you send a Christmas card late, or if you say Merry, you know, Happy New Year to somebody, you never apologize for being late. But, you know, Hallmark Cards even makes a belated birthday card where you apologize because, and the history of that is that you didn't offer them protection on the day that they needed it most.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, at Christmas time, you know, we all put candles in our windows, and that dates back to England in the 1500s where, and I love this one, If you put a candle in your window, it symbolized that if a pauper or somebody on the street came to your back door, you would welcome them into your kitchen and you would feed them during the entire month of December. And so I became fascinated by the history of traditions, and I write a lot about it in the Joy of Family Traditions. And Christmas I found hilarious because so many of these traditions were basically bawdy pagan rituals. And when the Catholic Church became more and more powerful, they realized that, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. And they sanitized them and you know, cleaned them up and changed them a little bit and appropriated them in an effort to really win the pagans over to their camp. And, you know, the history of Christmas is a Roman feast called Saturnalia, which was really a wild affair. In fact, Pliny the Elder supposedly built the first known soundproof room so he could continue working during all these noisy festivities that were out in the street. And I'd say that, you know, of the major holidays, I think Thanksgiving is really the only one that is not based in these ancient rituals. So in the book I go into that because I think it's, although it's not necessary to know the history behind a lot of these gestures, it really does enrich the experience if you do know them, and they're fun. They're fun tidbits of history.
I know that there are those who connect Thanksgiving with more of a celebration of the harvest, and so
That's right. Could
go back many, many hundreds or thousands of years as well, though obviously the more modern is it's strictly an American celebration to celebrate the pilgrims and the Indians sitting down to dine.
Right. And yeah, certainly there were many, many, many ancient harvest festivals and, you know, throughout the fall. But it's very interesting with even Hanukkah, you know, a festival of light. There's some speculation that was really derived from the winter solstice where, you know, they were working very hard to try to bring back the light because you can imagine how scary it was when the days just got shorter and shorter up until the 21st of December.
Oh yeah, I remember a few years ago, I was very curious about Hanukkah, thinking, well, they celebrate it right along with Christmas, so it must be a really, really big deal. So I started talking to some of my Jewish friends, and they said, no, actually, it's one of the minor holidays. And
it's
I thought,
true. You
okay.
Know, I think Hanukkah has come on in the last 10 to 20 years because people feel this competitive spirit with Christmas. You know? I mean, I remember my best friend, Julie Weintraub, always wanted to come over to my house because, you know, Christmas was much more interesting than
Hanukkah.
My holiday's
bigger and better than yours.
That's right.
So when we start to sit down, do we want to sit down and participate, make it a more of a participatory type of thing, maybe incorporate the kids and the other family members and maybe even other family members extended if you're getting together on an annual basis for a family reunion kind of thing.
Yeah, and you know, you can borrow holidays. I mean, I know one couple that he's Jewish, she's Christian, and they are both rather agnostic. So they celebrate Hanukkah and they have a Christmas dinner, but really their sort of spiritual holiday is on the solstice when they actually have a lovely tradition of going out into the woods and cutting down a tree and coming back and sharing poems around the hearth with their good friends and then having a dinner.
I'm
not sure if I answered your question right there.
In a sense, and I think that these traditions are, again, they're extremely important because there's a part of that, I don't know, in my mind the word glue comes to mind. It's sort of, there's an adherence, an adhesive quality that brings people together, that it sort of unites them when they go through these different celebrations and rituals.
Yeah, and, you know, when I was writing my book, home and hearth became more and more important. And often when I would interview people, they would profess to have no traditions. And then they'd call me a couple of days later and say, well, you know, my family did do this. And often they centered around family. I mean, for example, one friend of mine, his family had Poet's Corner every Sunday night, and they would have a nice dinner, and then they'd go into the living room and sit by the fire, and everybody had to bring a new poem and read it on Sunday night, which I thought was, you know, sort of fun and lovely. I remember reading that JFK, that his daughter Caroline, well, actually Jackie, would ask for his birthday that each child memorize a poem. And he said that those were the best birthday gifts that he had ever received. And I think that especially in today's world where it's really hard to stay together in the evenings, and I have a brief rant in my book about the, you know, the with kids' sports going every evening, and it's very hard to sit around the dinner table together. But I think that it's really important to do that a couple of nights a week at least. And there's actually a township in New Jersey that has declared, I think it's Monday nights, that there can be absolutely no meetings. There can't be school events, there can't be civic events, there can't be town hall, there can't be any sports activities. And the idea is to just encourage people to go home.
I remember growing up, for the most part, if it wasn't Friday night, it was Saturday nights that were always the evenings that the kids in the neighborhood managed to get together, and one of the, I'll call it a tradition, if you will, we would play. We would chase each other up and down the block and around through the alleys. And the way our neighborhood was, you had four or five, maybe six houses. The front yards had trees. There were no fences dividing the yards. Mm-hmm. You could leap over the chain link fence, which was only about 4 feet high. I mean, you know, you had sort of unwritten permission by the adults that, you know, you could kind of do that. Just don't tear the place down.
Right.
And we just had a great time. It was our version of tag, if you will.
Yeah.
But it was cool, and the air was crisp, and it was just a wonderful, and I always looked forward to those. It didn't matter whether you won or lost. It was just the participation part. And so
that's
for
great.
Me, that was such a cool experience. I still remember that, and I kind of miss that every once in a while, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think another important tradition, if people can do it, and it's really expensive, but if you can, I think a family homestead. And I remember the same man who was Jewish and his wife was Christian, and they both celebrated the solstice. He told me he was a professor of economics at Williams College, and he told me that when he was a young professor, he had no money, but they bought land in Maine, and over the years they built a cabin, and then when their kids grew older and got married, the kids each built cabins there. And he said it's really their spiritual home. And I remember reading Arlo Guthrie, too, that he said that he bought this big piece of land in the Berkshires, and he gave each kid several acres. And, you know, if there's a place that everybody can retreat to, even if it's just a little bit of land and you just build a tent on it, you know, if it's in a lovely location, which you are, your family will return there. And, you know, there's so many rituals as we're coming up to Labor Day of, you know, many people take the last week of August off and have Labor Day weekend with family. And it's really something to aspire to, if you can, I believe, in terms of creating strong family traditions and rituals.
I always thought it was the wrong name for the holiday because we weren't working. I thought Labor Day should be laboring, and it's just the opposite.
That's right.
It's just the opposite.
It's so true. It's the last hurrah of summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the other thing that I always enjoyed as we circled around into August, going into September, and, of course, as school was starting. There was this feeling in the air, even where I was growing up in Phoenix, Arizona, where as the sun shifted from the southern to the northern hemisphere, so to speak, or, you know, as it's moving south to north or north to south and so forth, I knew, oh, school is starting. And even after I was out of school in that same period in August and September,
yeah,
I knew cooler weather was coming. All of the things that we all look forward to, they were on their way. And it was like, oh, we made it through another hot summer. And it's going
yeah.
to be a glorious, and so it's almost as though nature has her own rituals, if you will.
Oh, I think that's very true, and I love them. I mean, I love the beginning of the season. You know, living in New England, the first leaves that fall, and When I was growing up in Indiana, I went to a school that we, every spring, every March, we went out and we tapped the maple trees and made maple syrup. And even to this day, when I see those galvanized buckets appearing on the roadside against the big old maples, you know, even though it's cold out and even though there's snow on the ground, it is the beginning of spring.
Wow. That's very cool. I have not yet... Although we do have some trees up here that in the fall and winter they do lose their leaves, the apple trees and the pear trees that we have up here, which is wonderful up on the property where we live. In Arizona, you really didn't have that unless you went up north. I lived in Phoenix, so you didn't have those dramatic changes of season, and I used to hear people talk about those. So you had to drive 50 or 100 miles to the north to experience those. But if you did, what a sight you saw. I had a couple of opportunities to see that. It was really spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about, you know, because we brought up the issue of family, what constitutes family, and again, it's who you choose to bring into your circle, so to speak, and you start putting together these different events, these different ceremonies and rituals, you are, again, you're building some cohesion there. You know, the one ceremony or the ritual or the event, which is Burning Man, that comes to mind. I mean, you have all of these people coming together around a central event. They know what's coming. And I know there's all the other stuff that's going on up until that point. But here they are, I mean, a multitude. I mean, very rarely do you have large numbers of people getting together for the same event year after year.
Well, and I mean, my God, it's you know, on the desert, and, you know, if you open your mouth at night, the sand goes in, and it's hot and dry, and you have to cart in all your, I mean, it's hard.
Oh, sure.
It's very hard. But what's so interesting to me about Burning Man is on the last night they burn an effigy. And that is a 1,000-year-old tradition of the harvest, to burn the effigy, which I thought was really interesting. And I guess Burning Man is now in Nevada, but it started in your neck of the woods, correct? I believe it started in California.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, 30 years.
But maybe somebody could. We've got some time. If you know, as a matter of fact, I do know a gentleman here locally. His name is Jim Trotter, and he's always Mr. Information, especially when it comes to history. So if he happens to be listening, give us a call at 564-1290, and if you know the origins of where Burning Man started. But it's always struck me as such, and I don't know, maybe it's, I don't know if it's a guy thing because I love fire, but I've seen the specials on TV about it, and I thought, oh, wow, would that be so cool to be there?
Yeah, my husband has been, and he's tried to drag me, but the end of August, it's so sweet in New England that I have a hard time thinking of going to Nevada. But, you know, just look at that one example of, you know, we talk about how ancient traditions are. You know, the Druids would burn large effigies that, you know, represented the spirit of vegetation. And if you read Julius Caesar, you know, he mistakenly thought that the Druids sacrificed people when he saw these effigies and wrote about it in the Gallic Wars. And what's amazing to me is that, you know, 1,000 years later, people of all ages are gathering in the Nevada desert every September, and on the final night, they're burning, you know, they're setting ablaze this effigy.
And by the way, I have to, I misspoke just a moment ago when I said that we don't get together in large groups to celebrate and what have you. And the reality is that we do. And some of them are sporting events. Some of them are political. And one that's, of course, fast approaching, it's just a week away. And that is something that's been celebrated for, I don't know how many hundreds or 1,000 or more years. And that's the Olympics. Every 4 years, peoples from hundreds of different countries will come to one central location to compete, but it's not the same kind of competition as, say, the playoffs in the World Series or the playoffs for football or basketball. There's a different feel to that sport, the Olympics, than there is to any other sport that there is.
That's very true. And, you know, something that you said earlier about families and traditions, it's, you know, it's the group that you want to make something special with. And one thing that we're seeing more and more, and you're growing up in Phoenix reminded me of it, is girlfriends. And your wife was talking about this earlier too, is you're increasingly seeing, you know, friends wanting to reconnect, especially if they're, you know, they work full time, they've got husbands, they've got kids, they've got aging parents. I mean, life is crazy and hectic, and how often do you see your best friend from college? But more and more women are making an effort to spend a weekend together a year away. And I remember reading about a ranch in Arizona that really caters to these retreats for women who want to get together. And whether you're going to like a yoga retreat like Kripalu, or you're going on, a ranch vacation, or a friend of mine, every Memorial Day, she and her girlfriends pick a different city and they take turns. And, you know, the kind of experience in Miami is very different from the experience they might have in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a way to establish and to reaffirm bonds with people that you love.
Before we wrap up this particular segment and go to break, let me ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important are ritual, tradition, and ceremony in our lives?
Oh, I think they're a 1, if 1 is the most important.
Okay. All right. Number 1. And we're going to end with that in this segment. We'll come back to wrap things up here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story. Jennifer Traynor Thompson's my guest. She has written the book, The Joy of Family Traditions, and we certainly hope that you'll pick a copy up and check it out. And there's a website. We'll give you that as well in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help fulfill your deepest, darkest dreams, or brightest, as the case may be. Stay with us. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with Jennifer Traynor Thompson, and she's written the book Jennifer has called The Joy of Family Traditions, and we're talking to her here on Tell Me Your Story every Saturday at 3 o'clock. You can hear us live on the Internet, streaming. Go to richarddugan.com and just click on the middle of the page up there. It's Listen Live, and you can hear us every Saturday. You can also download the programs that are put up there. I'll put this one up there shortly after the broadcast is over. And we hope that you will listen to it and also encourage others to as well and participate in the program when we ask you to call in and share your ideas, your concepts, your thoughts. Jennifer, one of the interesting traditions we'll wrap up with is the one on harnessing of curiosity. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think that, curiosity is it's a wonderful attribute that kids have naturally, and I think as we get older, it's so easy for it to fall by the wayside. So there are so many little rituals you can do to really harness it. I mean, one is just to be playful, that, you know, for example, in the springtime, trying to balance an egg on its oblong end, because you know, legend had it that it could be done on the vernal equinox when the days and nights are of equal length and the world is supposedly in balance.
Well, I have seen that done. I have done it.
You have?
I have done it.
Okay, well, think about what that leads to. You know, a discussion of the vernal equinox and the solstices and not only harmony and balance, you know, where you find that in music, where you find that in art, where you find that in architecture. You know, the egg dome at the Olympics that's being built, you know. So I think that there are so many small rituals that can just lead as a thread to so many other topics.
Mm. Well, we are looking forward to maybe having you back on in the near future to talk further more about this, as well as your one of your other books, Beyond Einstein. I'm rather intrigued by that book as well.
Oh, good. That's about the theory of superstrings, which says that the world began in 10 dimensions.
Oh, well, I'd be interested in maybe hook you up with another one of my future guests who's written a book on the fifth dimension. So he's 5 behind, and he better get started working on the other 5. But it's really been a pleasure to have you on the program. The Joy of Family Traditions, and we're certainly glad that you have shared our tradition here on a Saturday afternoon with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we encourage you to pick up a copy. There is a website people can go to, Jennifer?
Yes, it's www.joyoffamilytraditions.com, and people can contact me on that website as well.
That'd be kind of fun. Maybe, send her a written description of some of the rituals and traditions and another book, Jennifer.
Yes, please do.
Another book. There you go. Jennifer Traynor Thompson, and again, the Joy of Family Traditions. I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we encourage you to continue listening to our program every Saturday at 3 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, or Daylight Time, depending upon the time of the year. when they change the clocks and we spring forward or fall back or however we do that. I am actually, Jennifer, glad we live here in California now instead of Arizona, because now I know that when I'm dealing with the other time zones, they move too, whereas in Arizona, they didn't, or we didn't, and it was very confusing, especially dealing with satellites. But we ask you to join us. Go to richarddugan.com. Email me, Richard, at richarddugan, that's D-U-G-A-N.com, and we would love to hear from you. I've enjoyed the emails that we've gotten, and the folks who have gone to the website, I have to tell you that the number of folks that have gone to the website and checked things out has increased, and it's a wonderful thing to see that you're interested in what we're providing. And the links to the other hosts that we've had, including Jennifer, there's a link to her website as well. Go to page, I believe it's page 3 of the radio shows, and you will be able to download this interview as also linked to her website as well. Next week, we're going to be discussing some other subject matter in regards to what is called Darshan with Mirabai Devi, Darshan and Transmission of the Divine Light. That's next Saturday here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Love to Lal. Have a great day.